Hello and welcome to Say It in Red, a podcast about visual novels. I'm Runa.
I'm Sarah.
And are you all ready to rage against the loop machine? So this month we played a little bit of Raging Loop. I say a little bit, but actually it was a lot of game. But we only played about, I don't know if it's
truly
exactly
we don't
half,
know.
But we have no idea. But we played basically the first two main routes of Raging Loop, right. And there are still more ahead of us. And so we're going to talk about that. If anybody is reading along and following along with us, we read up until the point where you acquire key 16. And the game will, I mean, like, basically you'll be at the same point once you are able to get that as we are, no matter which path you took to get there.
Stopped at a very dramatic moment. I got to that point and I was like, yeah, this is the perfect place to stop.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, even key 15, but I think key 16 gives us a little bit more to talk about and speculate on.
Yeah, it's just like a really dramatic
really
moment.
Good.
Yeah, it was good. We're saying, like, when we came into Raging Loop, we weren't really sure, like, how we would feel about this visual novel. As soon as, like, the plot got going, like, I could not put this thing down.
Yeah. So, let's lay out our preconceptions.
Uh-huh.
So, all that I knew about Raging Loop before going into it was it's pretty long.
Mm-hmm.
Time loops, because it's right there in the name,
uh-huh.
the loop part.
And then, like, the three characters on the cover.
And heterosexuality is a specter that I saw hovering over it,
sure.
Just from the box art. Now, I was right about there being the specter of heterosexuality haunting Mount Sinai,
mm-hmm.
But I didn't mind it as much as I was fearing that I would.
Yeah, I just, like, truly, I did not think I would care for the protagonist, and then he ended up being a much wilder protagonist than
yes.
I thought he would. Like, he is just some guy. He continues to be just some guy, but he is also truly a weirdo.
Yes. So, Sarah, could you tell me about your preconceptions? What did you know going into this?
Not really anything. There has been, like, this one YouTube recommendation about Raging Loop for the past couple months that I have been actively ignoring because I didn't want to think about anything. I didn't want to know anything about Raging Loop going in. I didn't want to have any kind of
yes.
preconceptions about how other people feel about it. And it's been on my, like, my wish list, my Steam wish list for years. So
yeah.
That's literally,
yeah.
And then, like, just kind of the assumptions based on the cover art, which is, like, Haruaki looking like, you know, some guy, Chiemi in the middle looking dramatic, and then Rikako and on the side looking also dramatic. Like, that's it.
Yes. Yeah. So let's set up the premise of Raging Loop. So there's sort of two premises that sort of fit together very nicely to tell you what this game is about. So there's two sort of premises that I think can really sum up the experience of this game. And the first is, of course, you know, the classic sort of rural Japanese horror story of
mm-hmm.
guy from a city.
City boy.
Yeah, city boy comes into it. Haruaki Fusaishi is literally, he is not the average. He is the median.
Yeah, yeah.
Of all anime boy designs. He is the median point of all anime boy designs.
Yeah. The art style is kind of something else. Like, I kind of went, like, I adjusted to it. But, like, when I was first starting out the game, I was like, ooh, I don't like these character designs. Like, Chiemi in particular, like, she's got some, like, real, like, over, trying too hard to make her memorable. Like, she's got, like, hair sticking out
yeah.
at one point, and then, like, her hair, like, comes down to a peak, and then, like, her braid is, like, always at an angle so you can see it in her sprite, and then, yeah.
Yeah,
know.
But it doesn't, you can't see the connection point of it, so it is just, like, a braid sticking out behind her shoulder.
But I got used to the art style. I guess the closest thing it actually reminds me of is, House of Fata Morgana, weirdly enough, but, like, not gothic.
Yeah. But not stylized enough.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, there's something kind of similar in the kind of approach to the coloring and, like, the styling. But
yeah, it just feels a little bit more like it's very conventionally styled and
yeah.
very conventionally drawn in a lot of ways.
I will say I'm surprised by how many background images there are, partly because, like, of what we've been playing recently, like, Loopers, obviously, like, Loopers used a lot of the same, like, sky image over and over again. Like, this one, like, clearly, like, the artist was just, like, every time they needed a background, the artist was drawing a background, which was kind of impressive.
But they still do a lot of clever tricks to even, like, extend the life there, because, like, it's such a long visual novel. There are so many scenes that are, like, that green Perlin noise fog background.
Sure.
Or... you know, like, just the my favorite one is whenever there are, like, transitions or conversations that happen while people are walking, or, like, Haruaki thinking to himself, there is just, like, a dark screen with a light gradient at the center.
Yeah.
Which is so useful. Like, listen, this is a great game to play if you're, like, how do visual novels sort of, like, effectively convey a sense of motion across scenes and place and things like that. This one does pretty good because sometimes it's using just, like, literally a background image that you can generate in Clip Studio Paint in, like, 30 seconds.
Yeah, yeah.
And they use it a lot, and it works.
Yep.
So that's the main, one of the premises is that, okay, guy from the city goes to this weird rural village, and they've got weird customs, and it's scary.
Yep.
This is something that we've seen a lot of times. I mean, like, most famously, I think people think of Higurashi, but there are so many stories about this type of thing. It goes back... In fact, I'm pretty sure you can trace this type of story, like, centuries back to, like, older folktales about this style of thing. So it's, like, a very, very rich tradition that is now in visual novels.
Sure.
Of, like, the city person goes to a strange rural place where there's weird religious stuff.
Right, yeah.
And you see that echoed in other parts of the world, too. Like, it's pretty effective horror.
Yeah.
And then the other part is something that you also see in other parts of the world, which is a game called Werewolf. And it's very funny because they are literally playing the game of Werewolf. If you are not familiar with this game, it's basically a party game where... People are, a lot of times it's facilitated by, like, a deck of cards or something like that, but you can do it lots of different ways. And there are, like, video games for you and your friends that basically follow the same format, like Among Us.
Basically.
And basically it is like Among Us with slightly different rules, in that basically one to three people are assigned a wolf and everyone else is a human, and the humans have to figure out who wolves are. Wolves can lie, and so you're supposed to be able to catch wolves in a lie and hang them. Each day, humans can hang one person, and each night, wolves can kill one person. Now, the wolves know who they are, but the humans don't know who anybody else is. Like, they know that they're a human, and they don't know who anybody else is. And so that's the basic premise, is that Haruaki, city boy, arrives in this rural strange village, and they're going to play a game of Werewolf where a couple people, one to three, are randomly assigned to be wolves.
And, like, to be clear, like, this game is all, like, structured around this idea of a long time tradition. So, like,
yes.
It's one of those things that, like, slowly is revealed. Like, as first it's, like, all mysterious, like, what is up with this small town. Uh-huh. And then, like, as they start to talk about, like, the wolves and stuff, you're like, oh, I know this. Oh, yeah. This is the game.
Yeah, the characters even at a certain point, like, mention it, but of course, like, the tradition is just different enough so that they're, you know, there are wrenches that you throw in, like, the normal way that you might easily solve this sort of problem. And then some of the common solutions to this game come up later on, too, when we talk about fixed majority things. But generally, those are, like, the two premises that sort of, like, are blended together to make this game run. And
it's so fun.
A really effective engine.
Yeah.
Honestly. This is why Sarah and I, like... We had trouble playing only this much.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
I was hooked.
I had to pump the brakes. And listen, that is not owing to Haruaki's charisma, because he doesn't really have that.
But at the same time, like, I kept thinking about him. Like, Haruaki is one of the characters, like, like, yes, everyone is a little bit mysterious. There's things you don't know about everyone, but also you're not really sure what's up with Haruaki either.
Yeah. So let's just go over the very, very quick, because we cannot, there's too much game in this game.
I don't want to get trapped too much in summarizing, but there's a lot we can kind of dig into, like how this thing works, I think.
Yeah. So the extremely, extremely basic setup of how the loops go is, all right, Haruaki starts out, he's on a road trip because his girlfriend dumped him. He's 24 years old. He's in grad school for something that he doesn't reveal to the reader for yet.
Fascinating. But we get the sense that he is familiar with corpses, autopsies. Who knows?
But also perhaps human psychology. But maybe that's just a hobby. Because honestly, the guy is giving some vibes.
Yeah.
Maybe pushing people's buttons to see how they react is just his hobby.
He loves to see if he can get the reaction from someone that he wants.
largely amoral.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Like, it is rare to see such a brazenly amoral protagonist.
And also, like, he is kind of overly, he thinks about it a lot. Like, he's someone who is, like, very self-aware, but also, like, understands that he maybe he's always thinking about, oh, maybe this isn't the moral choice, he's always, like, thinking about why he's making the choices that he's making, and it's not really about morality, but it's about understanding himself and, like, what end goal he wants.
Yeah. And I'm not sure how far the game will take that, but it is a fascinating thing to have along for the ride.
There is a moment in the very last route we got to where it is just like, it's so good.
That was really fun. That was really fun. Where he was like, I guess I've misjudged the vibe.
Yeah, I guess we're not on the same page. I thought we were all, you know, in for a penny and for a pound, but I guess not.
But Haruaki, fascinating sort of character, also because he's really self-motivated for a lot of it in a way that is still, like, readable and legible to the audience. Like, he does not come off either as, like, a weird sociopath, as sometimes can happen in games like this. But also, he's not, like, oh, I have to help and save people because it's the righteous and good thing to do. He's very much like, well, if I have to let a couple old people die in order to get away with this, I'm willing to do that.
He is very much on the page of this game. Like, he is like...
Yeah, he is all in on the premise. But yeah, so Haruaki starts off, he's on a road trip, gets directions from the...
She kind of... It was still at the phase of this game where I, like, wasn't really sure how I felt about it. And, like, her character design kind of looks like she has dread. So I was like, I don't know how I feel this choice. And I don't know if that's just, like, a artist choice where they were doing curly hair and it came out looking like dreads. But, like, I definitely got to this and I was like, okay.
It's one of those things where I think... they've tended to be like, okay, well, we want to show that she's, like, kind of a rough-and-tumble, intimidating punk, and how do we do that? And obviously they go to, oh, let's give her a, quote, hip-hop style. And what that means is drawing her with features associated with blackness, which is how they're, like, deciding to shorthand, oh, she's dangerous and intimidating.
Like, and it showed up so early that, like, it's generally affected my, like, I was already kind of like, in a wary mode, and then we got to the town and we got to the plot and I was like, okay, I guess that was just like a one-off kind of weird choice.
Similarly for me, Haruaki's internal monologue early had me just like rolling my eyes constantly for like the first 20 minutes of the game. I literally so when I started this game, I had just finished watching some Kamen Rider with friends, and so we were like, well, let's just start this visual novel that I'm going to read up and see. And I was also kind of high and decided to give Haruaki's internal monologue only a Midwestern noir detective voice.
Yeah.
because that just fit. Like, it was that level of, like, yeah, I'm on the hard road again after that woman left me, and I don't know what mysteries await, but I suppose I had to face them as a lone man in this lonely, dark world.
Yeah.
And that's, like, how he starts off.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think the more puzzles you give a guy like that, the better, because without a puzzle, he's gonna make one of, like, some existential crisis of his.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I think I remembered what I wanted to say about Haruaki. Like,
yes.
The thing about him is, like, he's making, I think, in the way that we describe him as far as, like, the way he reacts to things and the way that he is, like, in the game, like, he's making these choices not because we are directing him. And I think that's something that we'll kind of get into more as we talk about, like, how the game is structured. But there's kind of, like, there's kind of a gap between the choices that we can make and, like, the choices that Haruaki is making. So it never feels like...
Yeah.
Like, you know how in a lot of visual novels, like, we're given, like, a bunch of options and then the protagonist has to, like, kind of act in a sort of weird way because we've forced him to act that way?
Yeah, which leads to, like, the Uchikoshi style of, like, a space for interrogating that influence on the character.
Right.
Whereas in this game doesn't really have that.
Where the character's making, like, some really bizarre choices because this is a game where we have impact on the choices that the protagonist makes. Instead, Haruaki is just, he is already playing the game. We are watching him playing the game. We are not directing him to make these weird, like, to approach in a certain way. Instead, it's kind of like, okay, we're choosing what path he goes on, but Haruaki is definitely the one who is, like, thinking about, oh, if I maybe approach it this way, I will get the result that I want. It's kind of interesting to have that kind of, like, disconnect between the player and the protagonist in that way. And I think, in general, this game is much more interested in storytelling than it is in game design.
You can see that especially in two areas. First is the overall routing of the game.
Yeah.
In that the game has multiple routes, right, and lots of branching parts, but functionally, because of the gate and key mechanisms set up for it, there's just one linear path, really.
Yeah.
Like, there are some terminal dead ends that you can take that don't really give you anything, but they, like, basically are, you make the wrong choice, you almost instantly die, and you go back to make the right choice instantly.
Yeah.
If there is a path that you follow down for any length of time, it will give you a key, which is required to progress further on down another path. And so functionally, you get a fairly linear narrative, even with, like, the branching chronology of it. So it is a very linear path through a non-linear in time story, which I think works just as fine for a game like this. Like, it's just enough to still be considered a visual novel, but really you're progressing from one point to, as far as we know for right now, a single predestined end, though I don't know if this game has multiple endings, because again, we've avoided looking up as much as possible.
I mean, I guess we've technically gotten two endings at least.
I guess so, but, like, the game is always very clear
but
about...
But Haruaki himself, like, remembers these, and like, the keys are kind of, like, Haruaki carrying over information from previous. So it is, for him, kind of a linear experience.
Yeah, and none of the endings that we've reached, like the first or second ending, neither of them is, like, what you would consider, oh, I could put down the game now.
Right.
Because the game itself encourages you to keep on going.
Right.
The second thing that I think really shows this game's emphasis on storytelling and getting a player through the entire story is they have a lot of tutorial and help features to familiarize people with the genre.
Kind of like an overbearing amount, to be honest.
Yeah. It really was like, when I was reading this for the first time, so I had two people with me who also were familiar with visual novels already, so, like, it's not like we needed the overview.
I kind of wonder if they, like, designed the game and then got feedback of, like, this is kind of confusing, make it clear, and they were like, okay, I guess we'll put a tutorial in.
Yeah, well, so I could see that, or I could see, you know, like, marketing saying, listen, if we want, I mean, listen, marketing, of course, would say Western audiences don't really get visual novels. They get Among Us, but they don't really get visual novels, and so you should probably just try and market this as, like, an Among Us story, and then explain what visual novels are. But I don't know that that's the case. I don't know that that's
also,
actually...
Also, this game definitely came before Among Us, because it came out in 2017, but...
Well, I mean, but the idea of Among Us.
But yes, you're like... You're, like, imagining...
Wait, Among Us was older than that.
Among Us is 2018. It was a year later.
For real?
Yep.
Time doesn't feel like it exists.
But, like, you're imagining, like, the scenario where someone is trying to take this game and market to a Western audience. What would they do?
Kind of. But, yeah, like, that idea. Because, of course, market research on the Western audiences will show pretty easily that, like, wow, they don't really get visual novels as a whole. So... If we want to market one, maybe we need to, like, do... But I don't know that that's the case.
I don't... Because I don't know if this game was particularly concerned with Western audiences or not. Because it's not a particularly Western game.
Anyway, my point is that we were reading this tutorial part, which goes very in detail about what is a visual novel, what is the way that you play this game, what is a gate and key mechanism, which they put very literally into, like, the text of the tutorial. And we were like, okay... Unless this is, like, intended by someone for some reason to be Baby's first visual novel, which the writing and story does not pan that out.
I know.
It feels almost like the tutorial is here for some sort of, like, meta-narrative purpose that
Maybe.
We could not quite parse.
Like, we definitely have, like, at the end of each kind of bad end, you can have a hint which basically directly tells you, like, okay, do this next. And it does add to, like, a certain vibe to the game, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that I've seen it done successfully in other games, but it's a little clunky here.
It is, especially because it really does feel like it is just another layer of a push to get you to keep on going and keep getting through the story.
Mm-hmm.
And... I don't know, maybe that does work for some people. That's something that I'd have to, like, gauge with someone who's less familiar with visual novels if they got into this and were like, you know, how would they react to that sort of thing? Because from our perspective, like, knowing this genre inside and out and pretty familiar with all of these different things that they're sort of, like, pushing you for, it does feel either redundant or, like, almost suspicious in a way.
Sure.
You know? Like... And I think that's just me.
Yeah,
I think that's just me wanting it to be more than just, like, a very heavy-handed tutorial that's like, hey, did you know that you're playing a video game and the next step is this step?
Yeah, I really feel like they thought that the keys thing could be kind of confusing. And whereas I was like, oh, no, it makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's very clearly labeled. They've done a lot to, like... go back and make it extremely clear in the flowchart. It's got a very nice flowchart that you can jump into at just about any point. Works pretty easily. Honestly, I think that it contrasts interestingly with visual novels from 10 years prior.
Yeah.
You know, we look at other visual novels from, like, the early 2000s and or even something like Chaos Head, for example. Like,
sure.
You know, when we were playing Chaos Head, the way to actually even just, like, access delusions was something that so many of us did not get at first.
Yeah.
Because we were like, wait, what is this?
Yeah.
Because we didn't read... First off, we didn't read the manual. And second, we didn't have, like, that cultural knowledge around it when it happened. And so there were lots of things like that, like you get the delusions in specific orders to get the different Noah endings, or just, like, using the delusions at all or knowing what, like, the different game mechanics were. That was all kind of, like, obtuse intentionally to both, you know, reward you for playing around with things, increase replayability, you know, encourage that sort of, like, culture of information sharing around the game and things like that. Whereas in this game is fully self-contained. You do not need to understand or know anything, and it will guide you through perfectly the exact experience that it wants you to have start to finish the first time through.
Yeah.
It is a spooky dark ride, but there are clear floor lights and handrails at all times.
Yeah.
In Raging Loop. Which is not to say that that's a bad thing, but just to give you an idea of what the experience is. So let's very quickly talk about what the routes actually entail, and then we'll spend more time setting up the characters and the sort of developments and mysteries, because we'll probably have a lot more to say about, you know, our thoughts, our critiques, our overall, like, understanding of the themes hits, and everything after we finish the game. Yeah. So, first route, Haruaki crashes his motorcycle because he takes this convenience store clerk's advice and goes to a mountain village, and a cute girl, Chiemi, finds him, and they spend the night drinking together, and then Haruaki in the morning is introduced to a weird village, and
everyone's really weirded out by the fact that, one, he came from the mountains, two, that he's here at all, three, that he has brown hair. Like, oh, the city boy.
Because he has dyed his hair brown. And which honestly is like an added level of, oh, this is the median anime boy design.
Yeah.
Like, he has intentionally dyed his hair to be more generic looking.
Well, I think in Japan, it's a little bit stylistic. Like, it's a stylistic
choice. No. I know, but also, like,
compared to our regular protagonist.
In terms of a visual novel protagonist guy, like, he looks so standard.
Mm-hmm.
But you follow him around. He's trying to fix his bike. Some people help him get his bike. And then he's, for some reason, like, lured by a sound and a song, and he goes down to see this giant pine overlooking the Saranaga Rapids, which is, like, the river basin that he crashed his bike into. This mysterious woman tells him to run, but there's mist all over. And now this is one of the fun parts that actually got me on board with this game, is at this moment, the text does, like, a weird thing where it changes the way that you parse the text from being, like, prose in a visual novel to being, like, adventure game commands.
Yeah, it's fun. I'm sure we'll see it again. But it's to express, like, his disorientation, where things are, but, like, you're getting a sort of a sense of, like, what he's trying to focus on. But at the same time, it's, like, kind of, it's a little bizarre. It's fun.
Yeah, it's very fun. Then he runs. He can't run. He finds Jimmy, who tells him to stand in an outhouse and lock the door and don't come out. And this is where you get your first sort of instance of time looping. Because the first time, Haruaki just cannot stop himself when he hears a scream. He just has to head outside.
Literally, we do not have another option. It is locked, so he must leave.
Yep. No other option. He sees a giant humanoid wolf-type creature, and he gets got, and he dies. And then he wakes back up, and you can play through the entire game from the start at this point, but of course the flowchart is extremely helpful for doing this. And so this time, when you're in that outhouse, you just stay put.
He's like, it feels like a very clear memory that I should not leave this.
Yeah, that I super died. So you stay there, and then you get to get involved in this whole nice tradition of the village of Yasumizu called the Feast of the Yomi Purge.
Well, I mean, notably, like, in this route, he is not allowed to participate at all.
Yes. He learns a little bit, but he learns it all through Chiemi. Basically, this is a game like Werewolf, where the Lord of the Mountain, Shinai, which is also the name of the mountain, has dictated that they need to serve as the bulwark against the undead returning from the Saranaga Rapids from, like, this world beyond. And the forefront, the vanguard of that, are the wolves, basically. And these wolves have also returned from the land of the dead and are going to kill humans each night, and humans have to kill them in order to protect the land from, you know, these returning undead creatures. And then there's lore that we get that Shinai has four guardians, and that is the spider, snake, crow, and monkey.
More gameplay elements. It's very fun.
Yeah, these are the gameplay, the logic game elements. There's also a little bit of, like, internal, like, inter-family politicking that we'll talk about when we talk about characters. But basically, the guardians can give the humans basically a skill that can help out, but also sort of complicates the game in interesting ways that we see.
Like, we haven't said it outright, but, like, this is definitely, like, a death game. And, but it's not, oh, like, yeah. It's not presented that way, but, like, it is functionally that in kind of a fun way.
Yeah. Which, like, time-looping death game.
Yep. Yep.
Absolutely. It's a staple of the genre.
Yep.
So we end up seeing Haruaki trying through Chiemi to figure out what's going on with this game and influence its outcome.
And also to try, to a certain extent, to, you know, impact the outcome. But he definitely, like, comes away from this being like, I really need to be in the room. I cannot. Yeah. I cannot do it this way.
So basically the game is such that they know that there are a certain number of wolves because when they wake up in that morning, there will be a couple spirals in blood on a large stone that's in the town center.
And how many spirals tells you how many wolves there are.
Exactly. And in this first route, there's two, so there's two wolves, and they have to talk amongst themselves and figure out, okay, who's the wolf? And who are, and the idea is that you vote to hang the wolf, and you can hang one person a day, and the wolves can kill one person each night. Now, the humans with guardians all have special abilities. The spider can protect one person, so basically they write a name on their and put it under their pillow,
but cannot protect themselves.
They cannot protect themselves, but they can write someone else's name, put it under their pillow. And then that person can't be killed by the wolves. So if the wolves try to kill that person that night, then there's just no one dead.
Yeah.
And so that, I mean, that works out really handy.
Yeah, ideal scenario is you protect the right person that the wolves are going to go for, and then it cancels out. They don't kill someone, and the person is protected.
Yeah, so in theory, it is possible to have a quote, perfect game where you just immediately kill both wolves and they never kill a human, but, like...
Good luck.
That didn't happen. That didn't happen this time. Then you have the snake, who has the ability to write one person's name down each night, put it under their pillow, and they will learn whether that person is a human or a wolf. So that's very helpful. Hounced ever. We don't get too much use out of that in this first game. And then you have the crow, who has the ability to discern whether a person hanged the previous day was a human or a wolf, which is also helpful because then it tells you, you know, like, okay, were we right?
Right.
And then we have the monkeys, and there's two monkeys, and their only ability is that they know with absolute certainty who the other monkey is. So it's basically a way to cut down on the number of suspects pretty quickly because you can verify that there are two people who you know are humans, because only the humans get those guardians. And so that's basically, like, the mechanics of the game, and they'll play around a lot with this of, like, wolves trying to figure out, like, how they can manipulate situations, and then the humans trying to figure out, okay, how can we outsmart the wolves? How can we sort of, like, corner them?
How do they get information from each other without the wolves finding it, and two, being tricked by the wolves? So, like, there's a lot of, like, testing each other out, trying to get a feel for, like, who do you trust based on their actions, and, like, are they acting differently than they did before, or, like, is there something weird about the way they're acting? But also, like, this kind of dedication, like, in order to play this game, we got to kill some people. Like, this is inevitable. Yeah. Our duty is to make sure that we eliminate the wolves, and therefore that means we may kill some innocent people if it gets us closer to killing off the wolves.
Yeah, and there's some interesting things also early on in that part of the folklore. So there's a couple legends that surround this sort of game. And basically, like, one of them is that a long time ago, the wolves were also part of the mountain's guardians. And then they really were, like, the game just, like, vaguely says, like, they oppressed the humans. And then the other guardians and the humans banded together and killed the wolves.
Mm-hmm.
And so that led to them coming back as undead creatures to, you know, exact vengeance. And this is why you have to kill them to prevent the Yomi, the people from the land of the dead, from returning to the land of the living.
We also haven't mentioned the fact that there is another way that you can die, which is what we just saw with Haruaki coming out of the outhouse.
Yeah, so basically there is a rule-breaking sort of like mechanism in this, in that if you do break the rules in some way, then you will just like die a horrible supernatural death like, instantly.
And it's a bit of a misdirect early on in the game, because you see Haruaki die by these wolf-like creatures, so you assume, like, oh, those must be the wolves.
Exactly.
But then later on you learn, like, no, not necessarily. Those are maybe some sort of enactors of this rule, but the wolves themselves do not turn into giant wolf creatures.
Yeah, there's like confusion because of the different people telling stories, and of course later we realize that one of the people telling the stories was a wolf
sure.
in this route, so
sure.
like, it made sense for them to like not be fully forthright.
Yeah.
But, you know, like early on it's like, okay, so one of the stories says that the people that you know have been replaced by doppelgangers, basically, who are wolves. The other one is like, well, they're going to turn into a big old werewolf, which is what Haruaki assumes based on seeing those in the outhouse.
And also, like, none of these are really true. Like, once you get a sense of the
yeah.
wolves, like, they are not, like, I assume that they were, like, being replaced by spirits that were acting as them, but no, it's just them.
Yeah.
They've just
yeah.
been, like, I don't know. they're passionate about killing now.
Yeah, and, like, this is one of the things that I think the game could do either very well or very poorly, and we won't know until
yeah.
the end.
Yeah.
But, like, the idea basically is that over the course of this, you're set up with the expectation thinking that, well, of course, these people, as they normally were, would never kill people, so something terrible must happen. But, like, when you confront the wolves, they honestly just kind of seem like, no, we just realized it was actually a pretty good idea to kill everybody.
Yeah.
honestly, Lord Shinai made a real compelling case that actually it was everybody else here who is the Yomi Bito, who's
yeah.
the undead monsters.
Actually, it's totally wrong. We are the ones in the right. We need to kill everybody because this is what is right and what should be done.
Yeah. And so, like, Haruaki has a lot of moments where he puts stock into, like, well, these people must just have, like, these fanatical local religious beliefs. But honestly, it doesn't feel like that can fully explain for some of the people.
Yeah.
And especially we see later on, like, in that second route, I'm like, okay, so this is very clearly setting up that there is something more going on when someone is made into a wolf.
Absolutely.
And anyway, so we go through this game, things go pretty bad because the corruption takes a few people pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, like, a wolf can kill one person a night, and humans can hang one person per day. Now, if a wolf kills two people a night, then the wolf would die suffering the magical corruption.
Right.
If a human tries to hang more than one person a day, the humans responsible would suffer that magical corruption. But also you can suffer it from breaking the rules of sheltering. So
yeah.
basically, each human is supposed to get in a single room, alone, lock the door, cleanse yourself, and go to sleep. And this is kind of partly reflective of the rules of werewolf in that, like, obviously, if everybody slept in the same room... and kept watch all night.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty easy to see who was sneaking around killing people.
Yeah, like the point, like when I was a kid and we played a version of this, like you kind of have to be in a house with a bunch of rooms and a lot of space in order to make this
yeah.
work.
Yeah, this is why the card game version of it, I think, has taken off a little bit
mm-hmm.
because it's easier spatially.
Sure.
In order to pull that off. Whereas like, while I do love the one where you play it in, like, a big house and you actually have people going room to
yeah,
room.
Yeah, like, that is a very, like, prominent childhood memory, like, visiting my cousins and playing this game.
Yeah, but, you know, like, this is the sort of thing that's basically there to enforce that rule
mm-hmm.
of, like, all right, now you have to do this so that we basically prevent anyone from learning how or who the werewolves are.
Also worth noting that Haruaki kind of doesn't follow this rule on the first night and still survives. He didn't, like, he was, like, yes, he sealed himself.
He stayed awake the whole night.
Yeah. Didn't wash himself beforehand. Only managed, like, the only thing he did was stay inside the closed door. And he survived. So it's like, there was some sort of, like, allowance for him here that we haven't found an explanation for yet.
Yeah. Anyhow, this first route goes pretty bad. Yeah. It goes pretty bad. Because there's one thing that Haruaki did not count on. Well, supernaturally, it's that there was an additional guardian mentioned in the sort of, like, song that he speculates.
So it's kind of unclear, like, yes, we do have one person who sides with the wolf.
Yeah, like, there's, like, this line about a badger running along late, and Haruaki theorizes maybe there's, like, a person who's, like, a human given the role of betraying the humans.
But it is at this point that we've played still kind of a theory, because he, like, goes into the second route making this assumption, but we don't really see it play out necessarily that way. So I'm interested to see if, like, that is solidified as far as, like, yes, there is a third person who always comes in at a certain point or not. I guess we'll see.
Yeah. But anyway, he basically drastically underestimates the social dynamic of the situation.
And also, like, does not have the ability to impact. No one trusts him except for Chiemi, and he's not able to participate in the voting. He's kind of always consistently locked up. Like, they decided that he is not a threat. Like, he is not one of the wolves, but at the same time, they don't really want him involved. So, like, he has minimal impact on the outcome.
They put him in the animal pen.
Yeah. They're like, you're gonna stay here till we're done. Bye.
Yeah. And so that first route ends pretty bad. He does try to escape with Chiemi. They have, like, it's exactly as much romance as I think is reasonable in this situation, in that he and she are both, like, flirting with each other. They're both in college, and they're both kind of like, I mean, like, I'm kind of down.
Yeah.
I'm kind of down if you want to, like, mess around and, like, go on a road trip and make out and hook up. But, like, also, we're kind of trauma bonding.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, they're both aware of it, but, you know, it's very much, like, grounded in that first route in a way that I was like, okay, I can deal with this.
I'm kind of charmed by Haruaki starting the second route and being like, you know, I can't place all these emotions on someone who didn't experience what I did. That's really just like having a one-sided love. Like, he's very rational, straight guy about it. He's like, you know what? I just gotta leave it behind and move on.
Yeah, like that was basically a timeline that did not happen now. And I need to, like, maybe I can have that connection with Chiemi again, but I can't just, like, I can't carry those feelings on.
Yeah. Which is kind of fascinating because of how much we get, like, in a lot of visual novels, we get, like, this instant connection, love carries over to many, like, timelines. Yeah. I think this is a really interesting approach to, like, having multiple romantic interests, in that he is, like, very self-aware of, like, I can't just carry over these feelings I had. Yeah, it's bittersweet, but, like, I gotta treat this as a whole different life, almost.
Yes. Now, the part where I do feel like it falls down a little bit is just how much it starts to feel like love triangle drama towards the end of the second route. And there's a good reason for it.
Yeah.
But still,
I was kind of charmed by it, but I don't know. It was funny to me.
it was starting to wear on me. But we'll see how it progresses.
Yeah, I'm very curious how we go from second route, oh, I'm going to marry Rikako. Also, Chiemi is maybe, like, I think the reason that I wasn't tired out by it was because of the reveal that, you know, Chiemi is doing all this stuff and, like, she is not, maybe she's actually trying to manipulate him in that route.
Yeah, but also, like, you know, the reveals of, like, other things going on with Chiemi, are fascinating.
Yeah.
But anyway, the first route ends pretty badly as Haruaki tries to escape with Chiemi, and she basically, like, decays and turns into a corpse as they're walking through the rapids.
Yeah.
And they just keep walking for, like, what seems like days. until finally he's, like, killed again. And this time he's like, okay, I've realized that that was kind of fucked up. I have to participate in the feast, and to do that I need to be recognized as a citizen of this small village that has an extreme wariness of strangers.
This is, like, it's so fun for him to, like, okay, I gotta find my way in. So, like, the way that he's, like, okay, I gotta situate myself better. I have got this pre-knowledge of, like, how these, like, there is a kind of joint town that is, like, the main town who sends kind of their outsiders over to this other smaller subset, which is cursed by this death game. So I gotta make my way into the other town and have them turn me into one of these outsiders, like, plant me into the village.
Yes, yes. So basically, Kami Fujiyoshi is the larger sort of, like, town that then sends the people it doesn't like to Yasumizu, this outcast sort of, like, rural subsistence village.
Yeah.
So, he goes and goes up to this town. You can do all sorts of antics. This is where you, like, basically do a lot of, like, rapid trial and error.
Yeah, literally you gotta get information, so you just gotta die a couple times before you can get it right.
Yeah. Eventually does, like, convince a police officer that he had this tragic, tragic story, and he just, like, got so drunk he couldn't possibly drive any further, and he was just thinking about dying, and now this new town is going to be his second chance.
I'm gonna start over.
I
was giving up on life, but, you know, I think I could handle living in this small town, just living the small, quiet life.
Yes. And so, you know, the police officer and his wife very much are trying to, like, shoo him away to somewhere else. Like, hey, you could start a quiet life in a different rural area that I know of.
They're probably, like, not completely, like, they're a little bit outside of, like, the kind of, like, they are not fully integrated into the culture of this town. They're a little bit outside of it, and they're like,
yeah.
So that's the reason, like, if he wasn't drunk, there was no way for him not to be, like, sent away on his bike and die.
Exactly. But then one of the members of the four head families, so those four guardians, mm-hmm. of course, they've all also got representative families that sort of run Kami Fujiyoshi. And one of them is like, oh, hey, you're down on your luck? Well, why don't you come have some breakfast and I'll get you set up and maybe we'll send you over to Yasumizu. It's a great little farming village area for people like you, and you can go travel with the journalist and cameraman who are heading over there today.
Also kind of worth mentioning, like, in the first route, Chiemi was pretty strict on not having Haruaki eat the food from the town, because she kind of felt uh-huh. like that was having an impact on kind of the relationship to, or maybe even, like, the mental state of people in the town. This time he was like, I'm gonna have to eat the food. I'm a town person now. I'm gonna embrace it. Let's see what goes.
Yep, not only have to eat the food, but, like, notably, the police officer and his wife always have separate meals mm-hmm. from the people in the community, which is another fascinating. Like, he's been there for years, and they still keep separate meals from the actual, like, people in the community, which is an interesting sort of thing. So I'm curious what's going on there, but yeah. We do know that there's a local thing that the food writer journalist is there for called Shishinare, which is basically like a fermented game meat.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very much described like, oh, this looks like zombie flesh, basically.
It smells bad, but tastes good kind of thing.
It doesn't even necessarily taste good. Haruaki was describing it like, it's like, it's weird. It tastes nutritious.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so anyway, second route, he gets himself sort of like further incorporated. He's trying to be sort of like very conscious of not placing any expectations on Chiemi. And meanwhile, like the straight man that he is, he immediately is like, oh, but there's this, like, shy, somewhat naive-seeming older woman, Rikako, who's also the girl who gives you the UI tutorial at the start of the game.
Yeah.
And she, I like Rikako as a character. I don't like her character type in Het Romance.
That's fair. That's fair.
Her character type is very much like, I am the prim and proper and very dignified religious figure, but I am, like, so scandalized by the thought of things like kissing and hand-holding and things like that.
But then there's also, like, this whole thing about, like, her role.
The whole flip of, like,
yeah.
Her role as head of the Uematsu family clan is as a bedroom woman servant, which is...
I get it. I was more neutral on it. I thought that there was some kind of, it was kind of cute to see Haruaki after, like, his like, very, like, outsider view of everything get a little bit, like, caught up in a romance for a while.
Yeah.
But I do see what you mean as far as, like, there's some tropes here that aren't great.
Yeah, it's not at all that I dislike this character type, because I do think there's a lot of interesting things you can do there. It's just that so often I only see it in Het Romance, and so because of that, Rikako as a character will be limited in what we can actually explore with her and through her to basically, like, oh, I am the person in the romance, I am your target, your goal.
Sure.
Which is really how the second route sort of ends up playing out, is that Haruaki is, like, determined to, like, wow, I have to tease this shy older woman more. Which, you know, like, normally is a noble goal, I will say, in like, the abstract.
I think that's why I was charmed by it, because it was almost like out of character for him to be so charmed by her, because he was a little bit too so distant. But I see what you mean. Well, I'm very curious about how it complicates things going after this route.
Yeah.
Worth noting that during the first route, Rikako does turn into some sort of, like, corrupted demon thing that we haven't really figured out what was going on there. So.
Yeah.
I think there's room for Rikako to be a more complicated character, but we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of those things that I just, like, It's got me like, okay, all right, I don't know where you're going to go with this, so that sort of thing. And, you know, a lot of this game is going to depend on how it wraps up some of these mysteries that it's dangling over us. But the other thing is that regardless of how it does wrap up, we did have an extremely good time with this first set of routes.
Yeah.
Like, it was really fun.
Yeah.
The core conceit of, like, a game of werewolf with, like, these rules and time looping and stuff is pretty fun to see. And they do make the sort of, like, dynamics between the characters interesting enough that it's at least, like, really fun to read through the arguments.
Right. There's a lot we still don't know, like, about, like, especially because we don't know, like, when was the most recent. We start to get a sense of, like, when the last time this happened was, and, like, that there is stuff that people aren't saying, especially when it comes to one of the young, like, kind of presented as, like, the third female lead is Haru. I don't necessarily mean that in a romantic sense, but as, like, if
in Chiemi, terms of the focus of the story,
right,
yes.
If Chiemi and Rikako are, like, leads, romantic leads, then Haru is kind of, like, the third female lead as far as narrative goes, and we haven't really seen where that goes yet.
Yeah, it's similar to how Takumi and Yasunaga are, like, the other two male leads.
Right, exactly.
Which are not necessarily, again, not romantic interests for Haruaki, as he made unfortunately clear that he did not feel sparks between him and Takumi in that second route.
Tragic.
It was very silly to me. There's just, like, one line where he was talking about getting closer to a guy, and then he immediately no-homoed it, and I was like, calm down, Haruaki. Like, no one was saying that, but then he was like, we were getting closer, Takumi and I, but not in the way that would make boys love
fangirls. Oh, yeah, now I remember.
Go flutter.
It's like, all right, dude.
And I was like, calm down, straight man. Anyhow, the second game goes a lot better in some regards, in that, first off, Haruaki gets the Guardian of the Snake, so that's, like, gives him so much power, especially with the time looping. Like, you can quickly whittle down suspects to where you, the player, can get a good idea of who might be the wolves pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, there are two wolves that you actually get to confirm really quick.
Yeah.
But there are three in this time.
Yep.
And things go fairly well for the humans. No one dies on the first night. They start, you know, like, figuring out who wolves are. They, like, are working together. Takumi and Haruaki are, like, forging alliances. And they're, like, figuring out how to, like, manage the votes and everything in, like, specific ways. And they're, you know, like, negotiating with Kanzo, who's, like, the old head who's been in this situation before and is really ruthless.
Yeah, we really see, like, the political struggle between the generations. Like, in the first game, it was kind of preemptively kept from happening. But, like, in the second route, we definitely get more of, like, okay, Yasunaga as kind of the representative of the younger generation and Kanzo as a representative of the older generation and, like, the conversations happening in the ritual are kind of like a power struggle between those, and Takumi as kind of the middle point between those two generations.
Yes, yes. And so we got to see a lot more of that dynamic, which actually in a way worked because the first route didn't have as many people really being active because so many of them died really fast.
Yeah.
So in a way that allowed us to sort of like get to know these other people and then get to know the larger cast in the second route, you know, pretty smartly done. And that, you know, I think worked to make the social dynamics more of the driver in the second route. And then things go like, you know, like they generally go all right according to plan. Things are all right-ish.
Technically, he wins.
Yeah, technically he does win. So what happened? So, spoilers here, because up until now we've...
Yeah, we've kind of avoided revealing the wolves until this point.
Yeah, but... I do think that this time we'll have to talk about who the wolves are to talk about why this next part gets, you know, like, so tense and dramatic. But, spoilers here, and skip ahead about 2 minutes if you don't want to know these spoilers and you want the second route sort of, like... fresh for you.
I don't know if 2 minutes will cut it if we're going to talk about this.
you're right. We'll timestamp it. Anyway, so it turns out that Haruaki realizes that Mochi and Chiemi are two of the wolves that are the two wolves that are remaining.
This is a really fascinating combination of wolves. One having an outsider, having Hisako, the food.
Yeah, the journalist who was like an early sacrifice. Uh-huh. And then like Mochi, who's like the cross-dressing boy.
Kind of a genius and like has real, in the first game, had some really great observations. Like the minute I knew that he was a wolf was when he was like, oh, I think he like gave off like three people as his potential wolves, and I was, and like only one of them was right. I was like, oh, you're a wolf, because this is not, like, you are too smart to have made this observation.
Yeah. And then Chiemi, who of course like previously had been doing the like heartfelt swooning maiden sort of like breakup line with because she's been like playing up the like squabbling with Rikako even before the feast started, and similar to how she was, and I think that Shiami's characterization is pretty strong, because throughout, before she's a wolf, she really is just like casual flirting, like, haha, guy I think is hot.
I mean, she does have one moment when like she first sees Haruaki again, or she's looks like she's crying, when it makes it kind of unclear whether or not this is just like her resonating with something previous, or whether she has a memory of it.
Yeah. But like generally her behavior is like normal as it was when they met in the first route. And then after the game starts, she ramps up the like romance tension a lot.
Yeah.
And you kind of realize that it's because she was a wolf. It's really good.
It's so funny. And like during the game, like, the number one reason why I suspected her was not necessarily that, but the fact that she was very much like, they had talked about how like the strategy for wolves a lot of times is to just like not be noticed. And she had definitely played up this like, oh, I don't really want to vote. Or I like played up this kind of idea of like, oh, I'm too, I'm too emotional to play this game. I don't like it.
Or just, like, being the grounding moral force. Like, there's even a point where I think someone praises her for, like, keeping everybody grounded and from stepping over their bounds, when really she's just like, yeah, that's just me only piping up to, like, shut down a certain line of thought.
Like, literally, they've kind of set up Hisako to be the instigator for them. And it kind of turns out, like, they had told Hisako, like, do this and everything will be fine. And then Hisako just kind of ends up, like, being in a bad situation.
She basically gets killed by the corruption because they tell her to do a thing that breaks the rules.
Yeah.
Anyway, they pull guns on everybody and then they just go on a killing spree because they're like, well, corruption, whatever, it doesn't matter at this point. We're just going to kill y'all. And so that happens, and it's pretty great. But so there's one moment in the second route where Mochi poisons a random bowl, and Haruaki gets it and almost dies. And
that's when we get, like, the weird, like, this part is weird where you hear, like, Rikako's, like, abilities and, like, her role as, like, Rikako's, the woman of the night stuff. It's like,
yeah, Rikako's abilities, it very much is like, style of thing.
Yeah.
And basically, like, the Uematsu are the Kami Fujiyoshi family that represents the spider, who's, like, the bedroom woman servants. And they are actually, like, in charge of, like, both protecting people's dreams and then also sex.
Yeah.
Like, really, her whole thing is she can supernaturally, like, take the corruption out of people. And so she's going to do that with, like, the poison that Haruaki ingested. But to do that, she also, like, straddles him and, like, sticks her tongue out and, like, gets all horny voice. But, like, that's also her playing it up as a role.
Right.
Like, she later admits, yeah, that's just sort of, like, a role I step into when doing this. And it is very much that, like, straight romance sort of thing of, like, oh, the girl who's shy and demure, but, like, in the bedroom, she's really licentious.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about it. I still really like Rikako as a character, and
I do. I just don't know how much they're going to explore this in an interesting way.
Yeah.
And there's so many ways that this could go into, like, that's some wasted potential.
Sure.
I mean, I do think it'll she's still got a lot of fun things that can go for her.
Yeah, yeah.
But that one part in particular, I was like, I don't love that. But anyway, she has this ability to take corruption from people. And at the very end, when Chiemi's going to kill Haruaki, Rikako, like, intercedes and says that she will take all the corruption from Chiemi. But then she finds something that's, like, a pendant that we never saw before around Chiemi's neck, and Rikako just says, oh, I'm sorry, that's something that even I can't take away for you. And then everybody dies, and Haruaki tries again, and he tries again by realizing that the wolves are planning to shoot everybody with shotguns, and so he just replaces the shotgun shells with blanks.
Sure.
And then everybody is able to, like, apprehend them. And this is where we get the moment that was really fun, where Haruaki, like, drastically misreads the vibe.
They're like, okay, so, like, we gotta kill both wolves, but, like, how are we gonna do this? Are we gonna just, like, accept the corruption? He's like, oh, well, we'll just kill one, and then we'll just, you know, I mean, as long, we can just, like, chop off the legs of the other one, and they won't be able to hurt us. It's fine.
And yeah, legs and arms.
And the way that the whole room goes dead silent, and he's like, oh.
And then they're like, well, we're gonna kill them anyway. I think that I imagine that,
like, this is
that's
just a
probably less painful
choice. And it's like, yeah, it's so,
yeah,
it's such a wild moment with his character. And so, like, so, like, you're starting to see, like, he kind of a sense, like, he is playing a game. He calls these things roots. He's
uh-huh.
definitely, like, thinking about this in terms of strategy, and he's like, well, you know, like, he's starting to lose a certain sense, and who knows if he was kind of always this way, but, like, a certain sense of, like, reality versus, like, well, strategy.
Yeah, and that is something that that's interesting to pull in as, like, a common thread with the previous games that
mm-hmm.
we've been reading, because I don't know how far this game is going to go into it, but it does seem pretty apparent that, like, Haruaki is losing his grip on, like, standards and like,
yeah,
normal morality as he goes through the time loop. And he seems like a guy who was already kind of, like, willing to entertain that,
right,
but, like, not this far. And now he's, like, all on just, like, very, very nonchalant deadpan. Like, oh, no, listen, this is just, like, the way that we win the game. And everybody was like, what the fuck?
He's also seen things that they have not on this route. Like, this route went very well because he has kind of interfered with a lot of things that could have gone bad. But in previous routes, like, there's been cases where, you know, people have gone off the rails and killed people who, for no reason except for, like, vengeance, and, like, other things of terrible things have happened. So you can kind of see how, like, he's been going over and over. Like, he's seen a lot of people die. He's seen a lot of things go off the rails where he would be like, well, I mean, is this different than all the other things you guys did when someone that you loved got killed? I mean, it would just, you know, strategically work. But we get the really great moment where Chiemi's just like, I give. It's terrifying to me that you thought that, like, it's more scary to me that you were going to chop off my limbs than you were going to hang me. I give up.
And that, like, that wasn't part of his strategy.
No.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he uses that in the future now that he realizes, but he was just literally like, I am just going to calculate the most efficient way to win the game. Like,
yeah.
I've got this.
We need to keep the wolves from killing us during the night. So, I mean, if they don't have their limbs, you know, it'll be fine.
Yeah. And so they do end up killing both of them because Chiemi is just like, no, don't worry. I'll just jump off myself.
I'd rather than you guys do this.
I'm beat. Don't worry. And so that happens. Also, like, listen, I don't know. I don't trust the game to go there, but, like, God, the other love triangle in here, of course, I guess love quadrangle that they set up is, like, the teens and everything going on with them.
Yeah.
And it's like, Mochi likes Haru, but Haru likes Yasu, but Yasu likes Chiemi, but Chiemi's like, I'm an adult,
yeah,
and you're a kid.
Also, there's this really weird moment where they talk about incest of some kind, and Haru kind of takes an interest that made me wonder if she is related to Yasu, and that's why she won't progress that.
Really sure, just because, like, they're they are technically, like, tied to Kami Fujiyoshi families,
sure.
I don't know what the relations are. But, like, her grandpa is Kanzo, who doesn't seem related.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly what all the others... It's hard to
say. It just stood out to me as like, Haru was very insistent on not expressing her feelings to Yasunaga. And that moment just kind of stuck out to me because she responded to it. Like, Haru is a character who is generally very closed off and is untrustful of Haruaki, so we don't really get a good sense of who she is and, like, how she feels about things. So, like, that moment where we get a good sense of her, like, having an interest just stuck out to me. So I guess we'll see if that comes back.
But Mochi and Yasu have some chemistry and dynamic that I do wish that they would explore. I don't know how much they will.
Yeah.
But, like, there are some moments where I was like, all right, now. And anyway, Mochi and Chiemi die.
Also worth noting that one of the reasons why it was very strange to hear that Mochi was one of the wolves is because Haru was one of the choices. And that's kind of like this active
one tension. Of the early victims.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the wolves' victims. And that is kind of something that gets brought up. Like, how could you do this to Haru? And, like, there's kind of a sense of, like, well, yeah, you would, if you were in this kind of scenario, you would kill the person that you care about most, wouldn't you? Or, like, there's kind of a weird tension there that didn't really get fully fleshed out, that I'm kind of curious about, like, this relationship between wolves and their victims.
Yeah. Honestly, I was kind of hoping that Rikako was a wolf in this first route, or the second route, too. Anyway, but then Haruaki just goes and does a lot of his, you know, like, wrap up things so that he can, like, close his bank accounts in the city and then move to this rural thing. And then, like,
the way he is, like, checking off the death flag knows yeah. in this scenario.
And completely loses his genre savvy when the mist clears.
He's like, I'm going to get a ring. I'm going to marry Rikako. I'm going to go live in the village forever.
Yep.
It's going
to
be great.
And then he comes back to the village and finds that one of the people who, like, was kind of chill at the, like, and reasonable throughout has gone completely, seemingly possessed by something and is talking about the wolves coming and has killed every other person in the village.
I mean, do we know that for sure? I mean, we don't really know why everyone died.
We don't necessarily know, but we do know, like, it's strongly implied that he killed everybody else.
Sure,
because he's, like, everybody else had their head split in, and this guy is holding an axe that has brain matter on
it. Right.
So it's, like, strongly implied he killed everybody and is, like, now in the thrall of some sort of, like, greater power, supernatural force that is compelling him to, like, say, the wolves are coming. No idea what that's about, or if it's just him having a panic
attack.
Also
worth noting, like, that is something, like, we have one older man, as far as the main cast, who says that all the time. And
yes.
We don't know much about that guy either.
Other than that he's been through, like, two of these feasts in mm-hmm. the past as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, basically that's the end for Haraki also.
Well, I mean, he also finds Rikako hanging there too.
Yeah. Well, that's why he kills that's why he kills Kyo at the end.
Yeah. Very dramatic ending to this, like, good end is in the way that it is very fun to me. Like, to have, like, the, oh, you thought you finally figured it out. You thought you'd already, like, written up your happy ending, even though, you know, it's bittersweet. Some people died. You go off, you write up you say your goodbyes to all the people in town. You get all your things in order. You come back and everyone is dead. it's good.
Yeah. So anyway, that brings us up to, like, key 16, which is where we are at. So that's all the stuff that we covered. Now, we did, of course, like, skip over large swaths of things, and we mentioned some characters who we haven't introduced yet. So let's go ahead and talk about the characters in the cast and generally the sort of, like, things that we think about them and mm-hmm. where their arcs have gone right now. And then that'll set us up nicely for when we talk about our second half of, well, I don't know if it's half. But basically the rest of Raging Loop next month.
I guess we've pretty much covered Haraki at this point.
Yes.
We've kind of covered Chiemi and Ryukaku. I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to say about either of them.
No, other than that, I do think that Chiemi's, like, one of my favorite characters in the game so far, just in the sense of, like, she's nicely positioned mm-hmm. in terms of the roles she's had in the story, being both human and wolf so far. So we've seen a lot of how she reacts in different ways. She's got a lot of good potential for depth of character, and also this fixation on God.
Yeah.
As something that she has seen and knows exists, and this, like, pendant that she has that Haraki found, not realizing it was hers, that has, like, the three spirals on it that seem like they're, like, the wolf signs that appear when the wolves are summoned.
Yeah, definitely, the first route, I was actually kind of suspecting that Chiemi was the wolf in the first one. That was before I really understood the rules. Like, once you find out the wolves of the first route, you're like, okay, I get how this game works. I get that, like...
Exactly.
I get how this is going to go for other routes. But, like, there is a sense that, one, like, there's something... Chiemi is more ingrained in this than we really know, and so I'm looking forward to finding out more about that.
Yeah, and part of it is, of course, because, like, during that first route, like we mentioned, there was so much misdirection about, like, what are the wolves?
Yeah.
Are the wolves literally people who are, like, turning into wolves at night? Do they know that this is happening?
Mm-hmm.
Or are they, like, doppelgangers replaced? Or have they been brainwashed? Some sort of thing. And then we do figure out what that's like at the end. Although we still sort of don't know the full extent of it.
Right.
Right?
But, like, once you see one game play out, you're like, okay, I understand, like, the function of how these routes will work.
Exactly. So then let's talk about Haru, who has also a sort of, like, deep connection to the mechanics of this game in a way that other people don't. Like, she may have witnessed or mm-hmm. at least, like, been part of a past feast or just, like, stumbled into it towards the end. But she seems to have moments where she, like, has a panic attack and... So one thing that I do appreciate is, like, there is a time where she has a panic attack.
Right.
And, like, her grandpa just, like, helps walk her through it.
Right.
But then also these panic attacks seem partly psychological and then partly supernatural because right. some entity seems to possess her at times.
Yeah, she has one moment where she recognizes that Haruaki knows something that he shouldn't, and, like, in that kind of otherworldly voice is like, oh, you've come back, haven't you?
Yeah, you've come back. You've risen again. You've tried many times, which is interesting language because she uses the language of the time loops similar to the language that they use referring to the dead coming back from the land of
right,
the dead.
Right,
right. And Haruaki this entire time has been framing it in his own language, knowing, like, you know, genre staples mm-hmm. and time looping, but the spirit is framing it in terms of, like, returning from the realm of the dead, which is, of course, like, the whole point of, like, the Feast of the Yomi Purge
right.
is to prevent things from returning from the land of the dead.
And, like, obviously, like, as far as names, too, the fact we have Haruaki and Haru feels like there is a connection there, like, that feels like a choice made that they would have similar names.
I'm interested in how they're written because I don't remember how Haruaki is actually written, considering that every time he introduces himself, he gives a different yeah. joke explanation of does. How his name is written. So it's possible that their names are written in completely different
oh,
ways that would not.
But, like, there's definitely, like, a sense of, like, some people don't like to call Haruaki Haruaki because it sounds similar to Haru.
Yes. And also the fact that his name, Haruaki, is spring
yeah.
and fall.
Yeah. It's good.
yeah. Anyway, so Haru's interesting. She's, like, a high schooler who's instantly suspicious of all the outsiders and doesn't open up, like Sarah said. She's very close to the other teens her age, but does not really sort of, like, connect with other people, and so far we've rarely really gotten a glimpse into her inner world.
Yeah,
she dies really quick in the second route,
mm-hmm.
and in the first route we see her survive long enough to just, like, get completely enamored by the idea of the wolves killing everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
But we do end up learning a little bit more about the other teens. So we have Yasunaga, who's very much the, like, I am the glasses character.
He's the class president of this rowdy group of teens.
Yes, he is the class president and is, like, very no-nonsense, very logical.
Very
someone
smart.
Someone who sort of, like, speaks for the younger generation, has, like, a good head on his shoulders.
Yeah.
The sort of kid who is trying on purpose to be an honor student.
Notably, when kind of making strategic choices, a lot of the adults are like, the worst scenario would be if Yasunaga was a wolf.
Yes. And so, you know, they, like, the other teens end up sort of, like, hanging around him and following his lead. And, you know, he speaks sort of, like, as one of the voices of logic and grounded reasoning in here.
He has some really good, like, he is someone that Haruaki really tends to kind of lean on when he trusts him, because he's, like,
yeah.
very both useful and, like, they kind of understand each other. They're both kind of thinking about things logically and can convince each
yeah.
other of their arguments and stuff like that.
Yeah. And then we have Mochi, Chikamochi Kamoshida.
Truly one of my faves.
honestly, instant fave. Outcast from, like, one of the big head families of the main city, probably for being extremely gender.
Mm-hmm. I didn't connect to me the fact that we saw Chikamochi in his school uniform, which is, like, too big for him, and then we cut
uh-huh.
to, like, the ceremony where he's in a dress, and I didn't recognize him as the same character, and then
yeah.
like, he has a conversation with Haruaki, and, like, it's totally just like, okay, yeah, this is just, you know,
yeah.
this is just what I like to wear.
It is the most normal conversation I have seen about this in a visual novel, in the sense of, like, as a thing that's just sort of, like, a side note
yeah.
for a character.
Yeah.
Like, literally, it is like, oh, are you, like, transgender? No.
No, I just, yeah.
But I just like wearing the dress, and it's like, oh, okay, cool. And then that's literally where it is. It's like, oh, yeah, you just like cross-dressing.
Yeah.
But not necessarily like cross-dressing as like, oh, I am going to specifically cross-dress. It's just like Mochi wears dresses. That's what Mochi prefers.
Yeah, he has access to Haru's old dresses and he thinks it's cute.
He enjoys that. And also like the vibes between him and the other teens are like constantly flirty in some way. Yeah.
It's also kind of fun because like, yes, is that probably one of the reasons that Chigamochi was kind of become an outsider in the small town, but also like it's something that's just kind of become normal in the small town because they're so it's such a small group of people. Like no one really questions it. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's very it's interesting
it's
to see.
It's kind of a refreshing sort of thing here. I mean, like everybody here is here because they've been like outcast in some way.
Yeah.
So, you know, we then talk about, since we're going through the teens, let's talk about Yoshitsugu, who we don't see very much of in the first route because he dies real quick. Mm-hmm. He is basically the punk kid who's, like, kind of slacking. He's, like, always, like, yelling at people.
Notably, Yasunaga's brother and, like, that tension between, like, Yasunaga as, like, the good kid and Yoshitsugu as, like, the...
As the bad boy.
Yeah, who is also, like, deeply loved by his mom.
Who's, like, the bad boy who's, like, 13 or something.
He's just... And, like, even Haruaki's like, oh, I get it. Yeah, you're just acting out. I get it.
Yeah. And, yeah, so Yoshitsugu is interesting because he's always, like, ready to fight with everybody at any given point.
Yeah.
And I don't know that we've really seen too much of him other than that, but he does have an interesting and compelling relationship with his brother. And so I do think that their tension about, like, which of them their mother actually loves more is a fascinating sort of, like, engine for drama between them.
Yeah, they're clearly, like, judging things, but, like, they can't help but relate themselves to each other and contrast themselves and, like, judge themselves based on, like, what the other seems to have. And that, but they, like, also clearly love each other and, like, that tension exists between their relationship.
Yeah. And so let's use that as a bridge then to talk about their mom, mm-hmm. Kaori. So Kaori is like, oh God, this woman is so tired.
I know.
Every line she delivers feels like they have kept her up for 48 hours.
Yeah.
She has, like, the face of someone who has seen, like, atrocities beyond belief.
Yeah.
Because she's just, like, sad, strained smile. She married into one of the head families in Kami Fujiyoshi, and her husband died. And then they just got stuck here ever since.
Yeah.
And so she's just been like, well, I will dutifully perform my role as the person who knows how to cook and can cook for everybody.
Yeah.
And that's mostly what she does. But she has a really great moment in the first route where she realizes, all right, one of my sons has died.
Yeah.
The other one of my sons either could be a wolf and so is in danger of hanging or could be a human and so is in danger of being killed by a wolf.
Yeah.
So what I need to do is I just need to kill every other single person. And then my son will be fine. And it's a great moment.
Haruki very quickly kind of understands, like, okay, her boys need to be okay in order for us to make it through this round.
Yes. Yeah, it's great. Because you can clearly see, like, she is so at the end of her rope.
Yeah.
Even at, like, the start of this game. And so ready to just, like, break down. And Haruki initially thinks, like, oh, she's gonna break down and just, like, you know, like, curl up into a ball. But no, she snaps in more of the, like, I will stab everyone in this room sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is always fun when you let a MILF snap like that.
Everyone ships her with Takumi, pretty much.
Yeah, everyone ships her with Takumi. That was actually literally my lead-in right there.
Yeah.
is that the person specifically whom she is a MILF for is Takumi.
Uh-huh.
Who is, like, the big, like, muscly field worker who is here. Like, he ended up being someone who didn't have to be here, but he decided to come back and stay here because so many of the people here, like, kind of rely on him. And he's got, like, an older grandparent figure who, like, he cares about a lot who lives there. And he tends the fields. He's also, like, one of the people who can easily get worked up in a way that is super unhelpful in the feast, but also could be extremely vital. And that's one of the things that Haruaki has to really, like, manage and negotiate in the second route.
He is manipulatable, but also very useful if he's put in the right position. Like, it is so interesting to get a sense of, like, the politics of the of this group and, like, how certain people are placed that makes them impact the general flow of the game.
Yeah. It is interesting also how being stuck in Haruaki's POV really, like, so much of his insight into people is, like, how easy is it for me to sort of, like, predict and control their actions?
Like, in the first game, Takumi just straight up says he is the snake, and everyone's like, I don't know if that's a good idea.
And he does die pretty soon. He dies pretty soon. Anyhow, Takumi is an interesting character, and we do get, like, some glimpses of Haruaki sort of, like, connecting to him on a more human level.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, one of the things that happens is he's frequently sort of, like, consulting with Haruaki and trying to, like, figure out, okay, what's our strategy? Yeah. What's our plan? How do we, like, game all of this and everything?
I feel like Haruaki in particular, in the second route, but maybe in general, like, feels like for both Takumi and for Yoshitsugu, like, he has to, like, he is invested in keeping them from going, from making terrible choices or going off the end. One, Yoshitsugu, because it's very easy for him to break the rules and die, which then turns into a catalyst for Kaori to snap. But then also Takumi can find himself in situations where, like, because he struggles so much with, like, investing in the game and, like, in understanding, like, that sacrifices need to be made, like, it's so easy for him to not be on the same bandwidth as everyone, and that's that can be a bad situation where he is, like, you know, hating people for playing the game, which is not useful for them in the long run of trying to survive the game.
Yeah. And of course, like, he's openly skeptical of some parts of it early on. Like, he buys in enough insofar as, like, he's on board with doing the feast and things, but he doesn't necessarily actually believe in all of the supernatural parts, like, right off the bat.
Right.
Which contrasts with his grandma, so I'm using character connections to just jump around.
I think
here.
That works, and it helps us kind of make those visual connections.
Tai Yamawaki, who is, like, the older woman of the village, she is very devout and religious.
Definitely much the most, like, has the background for all this is kind of her and Kanzo are kind of the two voices of the old generation and kind of the reasoning for this game and kind of the function of it as a ritual.
Yes. And so, like, Tai will tell people about, like, the folklore, will explain the stories and everything, and has, like, very firm beliefs that, like, no, this feast, this ritual is necessary and holy.
Yeah.
Like, we have to do this because we are sort of, like, placed here at the edge of Saranaga, which is the land of the dead, and we have to stop the dead from rising again. And, you know, she also is a person who can very easily sort of, like, sway other people indirectly, but doesn't really have as strong of a voice directly. Like, so, you know, because Takumi cares so much about her, Takumi can easily be, like, pushed into a situation where he will, like, attack anyone going after her, which is what we saw in, like, the second round.
But at the same time, like, there tends to be tension between her and the younger generation a lot of the times because she is, like, We gotta do the ritual. We have to do this. And is, like, willing to, like, her idea of who is suspicious is different than who the younger generation necessarily thinks is suspicious. And that tension exists.
Yes. So then to close out the older generation, we have the old wolf guy, who everyone just calls the wolf guy. He is unknown age, but extremely old. Everyone says that he's been that old for as long as they know. I don't necessarily love the way that he's portrayed, but it hasn't been as bad as it could be. He very much is the whole, like, okay, here's, like, a creepy old guy who's creepy because he's old, and he's kind of senile, maybe, but we're just gonna use that as, like, a sort of, like, thing for either comedy or terror as necessary.
I understand it's, like, a game mechanic. He is an interesting kind of pawn to have included because he is one of the most easiest to sacrifice because he cannot, like, actively play the game.
Or at least he doesn't seem to be willing to actively play the game at this point.
It's hard to know, like, how present he is. Like, you have other people's readings of him as someone who is, you know, not really paying attention. But, like, also, like, he has this strange connection to Chikamochi, and also, like, we still haven't really figured out why the two of them died in the first route. So, like, I don't love it. At the same time, like, I can see that he is being used strategically. I don't know.
It's one of those things where I'm like, well, this is par for the course. So many horror games do things like this where they use, you know, if it's not them using disability as horror or queerness as horror, it's them using, like, the specter of old age and mental illness.
Like, at least we have Konzo and Tae to be, like, older and to be fully fleshed out characters, but...
Yeah. So... continuing on with our character roster here, so we've covered most of the people in the village other than Kiyonosuke.
I know, we've kind of avoided, we just haven't really talked about him at all, because, like...
I mean, like...
That's who he is. He's a bit of a shitster.
He is.
Only in the sense that he is self-protective. Like, the only... good thing
he's
about
so
him
haughty.
Is that he cares about Rikako. Other than that, he is only self-serving.
And I guess, like, he has skills as a doctor.
Sure.
But he clashes with other members of the older generation, and, you know, like, does not necessarily think that the curse and everything is real. He's like, this is superstitious bunk. He is from the Nosato family and part of, like, you know, the big four families, but he's sort of, like, been sent out here to their mansion up here, which is where they send everything that they don't have any use for, including him. Which is such a, like, nice, poetic, sort of, like, succinct way to sum up his whole deal with regards to his family. And so he does not see himself as part of the community, but he is, and does not want to incorporate himself into the community.
It's one of those things where he's a character that, like, everyone's like, it would be so easy if he was a wolf. But he's never been a wolf, because it's like, he only exists as, like, this, like, it's too easy for him to be a wolf. Like, he is already...
he's basically a very unhelpful human. And not even on purpose. He just, like, is always clashing with people, is always bringing up flaws in logic only when it suits him, is always, like, pointing the finger at, like, people he just doesn't like sometimes.
From a game mechanic standpoint, it's interesting because he kind of functions as, like, this protective element within the ritual for Rikako, because she is kind of something that everyone, like, especially the older generation, is very suspicious of because of her kind of role. And, like, she is very quick to, like, sacrifice herself. So, like, because he is kind of always the linchpin to try and protect her, he kind of keeps this kind of political situation balanced in a certain way. It's interesting. It's interesting how everyone has kind of a political role. Even Kiyonosuke, who is kind of annoying.
Yeah. Kiyonosuke. Just a fail man in a lot of ways, too.
Yeah. I don't think we have mentioned Mei at all.
Meikako?
No.
Meiko.
Meiko, yeah.
Meiko.
Meiko.
Yeah, so let's talk about Meiko, because we're just bridging the gap from Rikako, since we already talked about Rikako, to Meiko. So Meiko is also considered an ill omen, because Meiko is a lost child, did not know her own name, did not really know where she was, and no one knew about her But she wandered out of the Saranaga Rapids a couple days before Haruaki arrives.
Very cute that they named her Mako because she says meh all the time, like a sheep.
Yeah.
Which gets translated to ba for English, but yeah, she's just like meh.
Yeah, it's translated to ba, which is very, like, it doesn't help you understand why they named her that, but it's very fun when you hear her and she's always, like, saying that. And she also learned the hymn to Mount Sinai wrong. And it's very silly because, like, you can kind of tell what she is it's in between just, like, being funny and being like, okay, this is how a child's mind works, I'm doing linguistics in real time.
And also, like, she could just be a sheep from the story, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. And so people are torn because, you know, like, the older generation, they're like, she's a bad omen. She clearly came from the rapids. That's literally where they say the Yomi return from the land of the dead.
Yeah.
Like, and Rikako is like, I will take care of her and explain different things to her. And so she goes and guides Mako through, like, all sorts of, like, correspondence, coded language and everything to, like, communicate different things. So, like, you know, Mako ends up being the spider in the second route, which is fascinating because Rikako then positions herself as the spider later on as basically a way to divert blame from Mako, which, like, I think most people could probably have seen was a diversion also because she spent the entire first half of the second route being like, if you have to vote for anybody, just vote for me.
Yeah.
I don't mind dying.
Yeah.
And Mako, other than that, is kind of mysterious. Yeah. Like, Haruaki has tried to help her escape several times, but so far it has not actually, or at least we don't know necessarily what happens to her. Really, it's kind of just like, wow, Mako is gone somewhere at the end.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious to see what we end up finding about her.
She's a mysterious element. Yeah.
Yeah. So, let's see. Who else do we have left to talk about?
We've sort of talked about Hisako, but not, like...
That's right. This is a great time to talk about the two outsiders.
Yeah.
So, Hisako Mamiya is a journalist and a food writer who writes under a pen name, and she goes around and tastes different local delicacies, and she's coming to Yasumizu to taste the, like, shishinare, which is that fermented game meat. And so, she is, like, really bubbly, really spunky, really, like, go-getter attitude. She's just gonna girl boss her way to maybe, like, having a couple hundred people read her column because she's really struggling.
Yeah.
It's a competitive market out there for a food writer doing a niche, like, extremely hyper-local cuisine.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got her photographer who goes with her of Yudai.
Truly, we know almost nothing about because he has died.
Yes.
Both times.
Yeah. We know, like, he doesn't talk a lot. He is huge.
Mm-hmm.
But in a way that almost makes me like, hey, Haruaki, are you just into really big guys? I think he might just be into really big guys.
I could support that. It's, there. Like, yes, are we constantly reminded of his size? And it's like, it kind of skirts the line as far as, like, it never quite hits fat phobia, but, like, it keeps reminding us of it, of the, how big he is.
Exactly. It's one of those where I'm like, okay, I'm wary.
Yeah.
But so far it hasn't been, like, as bad.
I'm just so used to worse that I'm like, okay, just keep going.
Exactly. Yudai is an interesting character in that he rarely talks, and when he does, everything he says sort of, like, counts a lot.
Yeah. Like, he is very observant.
Yeah, he dies early every time, so far. But also, then there's, like, there's moments where Haruaki is like, there was something unsettling and mysterious about him, and I was not really sure if he was on the level.
So notably, like, where we stopped between Key 15 and Key 16, Key 16 is gonna send us back to when Yudai was put up in kind of a location where he was by himself and ended up dying. So I'm curious to see if our next route he will be a big player or not.
Yeah. So that's something that I'm interested to sort of see in. Of course, Hisako was stuck as a wolf in the second route.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of played out in an interesting way because she really felt like she was out of her depth in a lot of it and ended up being used as a pawn.
And kind of that complexity of being an outsider given the role of a wolf kind of really puts you at a disadvantage.
Yeah. Now, I do hope that we get to see Haraki as a wolf because I am fascinated by the idea of
POV. What would that be?
Either that, I mean, like, actually my ideal would be a POV shift to a wolf character.
Sure.
Because, God, could you imagine, like, if Haru is a wolf and we got Haru POV as a wolf?
Yeah.
That'd be the best. Anyway, that I think covers most of the characters. There are some, like, incidental side characters that we'll talk about. You know, like, there's the guy from the main village who set Haraki up down there and everything. But in general, this is our cast. These are the people involved in the Feast of the Yomi Purge. And, you know, we're still trying to figure it out. Other than, like, the mysterious, like, voice that sometimes possesses Haru that may have also manifested in the first route to, like, make Chiemi fall asleep. But no clue as if that's, like, a physical person or, like, a manifestation yet. We're still sort of, like,
there's still a lot of unknown elements that makes it really fascinating.
Yeah, I'm sure that in some way God will play a part in all of this.
Yeah.
You know, like, we've got it set up in some pretty interesting directions, I think. We've got some strong dynamics between characters. We've got an interesting set of rules, and we've got, like, some consequences that were not readily apparent from the way the rules were initially laid out, which is, you know, the formula for a good sort of, like, okay, all right, let's see how it goes this time run.
And the fact that Haraki is making such, like, big, like, when he gets information, he makes, like, big plays as far as, like, how to change the scenario makes it really interesting. Like, there was such a huge, like, it felt like Haraki went into the second route, like, so well-armed. And that was really fun.
It's really fun to see that play out.
Yeah.
So now, in terms of what I'm hoping for the second route, of course, you know, like, in addition to the resolutions to all of these questions and everything, I do hope that they take things in, like, a bolder, sort of, like, more interesting direction that sort of, like, ties things up thematically. Because one of the things that I can foresee in this game is if it just, like, does not really land on themes and just gives us, like, a cool last route, that'll be, like, fun, but it's, like, okay, fine. So far, the themes of the game in particular, in addition to, like, the core themes of, like, any werewolf game being, like, trust and the, like, solidarity of community, are the things that are tied up with the story of Shinai. You know, you've got the different versions of one where the wolves are revered as guardians of the people, and the other where the other guardians and the humans betrayed them, and the wolves are now, like, the enemy coming back from the land of the dead. And so this idea of returning again from the land of the dead and the people there being, like, already dead or condemned, and also, like, the outcasts of society. Like, there's a lot of thematic interplay there, and it's not really clear what direction they're taking on it yet, but I could see them going in some really cool, strong directions, or just sort of, like, you know, we're just going to tell a fun death game.
Yeah.
And I think if it just ends up being a fun death game, it'll probably be a game that I enjoy playing to the end, but won't think about too much after we're done.
Yeah.
Which is also fine. Sometimes there's room in the space, I think, for a very normal death game.
Yeah.
And this is so far, like, it's just a good enough, like, just different enough from, like, average, but while still being very accessible.
It makes some choices that are surprising and that are part of the reason why I got so hooked on it, which is, like, the characters reacted in ways that I wasn't expecting, and, like, I could not always tell, like, one of those things where, like, I had suspicions, and sometimes the suspicions are right and sometimes they were wrong, and very much the game was, like, aware of that and, like, kind of playing to it. So I'm curious to see.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like, even though it kind of reminds me of Umineko in that sense of, like, we're playing a game, but the game is not the mechanics, the game is the story.
The
mechanics kind of are functioning to serve the story, but there's also kind of this difference between how we're engaging it mechanically and how Haruaki is engaging with it. Because yes. Haruaki is always playing the long version, whereas we are allowed to just kind of hop along. Like, he is not jumping Zero Escape style from one spot to another. He is always dying and starting then going over.
All the way back from his bike on the road before the convenience store. Right. Yeah.
So that difference, I think, is not clunky, but I think that makes for part of the reason why there is a different experience between what we're having and what Haruaki is having. But also that makes it's kind of interesting to not be completely on the same page as the protagonist.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that that makes for, you know, like, it's a thing that is engaging enough whether I think you've read a lot of these stories before or whether this is your first one. So yeah. It's so far, like, I think a pretty decent, solid, just like a nice fun time.
It's like, it is a solid, like, mystery, like locked room, like not a locked room mystery since it's not that, but like,
but just like it's a supernatural mystery. Yeah. You know, like we won't necessarily, like, you can try and puzzle through like who might be a wolf mm-hmm. in the game. I think that's a fun thing. Yeah. But like, I really don't think it's the sort of thing where we won't know about the mechanics of the looping and stuff until it's revealed to us.
Which I think is fine, because we are able to play around on the game level. Like, that is still fun to kind of start to have your suspects, to kind of play around and have the game confirm or reveal things that you didn't realize. Like, that is still really engaging.
Yeah. Now, the thing that I am most interested in, of course, out of all of the things that will be revealed, is, of course, I am curious about how the time looping mechanic is actually going to be incorporated sure. into this game sure. and everything. Because, of course, like, you know, we're doing this run of time travel mm-hmm. and time looping mm-hmm. games. And so we've had a lot of thoughts about them up until now, and we've seen some impact of time looping on Haruaki, so, you know, really thinking about, like, what is the game going to say about that time looping and how is that going to be used, that has me interested.
Yeah.
The things that are least interesting to me is how the love triangle resolves, but...
Oh, yeah, I mean, I am not hating, like, this kind of different, like, having him build off these different relationships. I don't care that much about, like, okay, well, at the very end, how does this wrap up? So much as just, like, I like yeah. the tension between the characters and, like, yeah. how they play out in different ways.
If there is, like, again, we haven't looked up because we're going in so blind as to not even know whether there are multiple endings to this, which we will figure out during the next segment, but...
The way I have completely avoided, like, Googling this game, because I just...
Yeah.
It's so rare for me to go into a game with, like, no concept of where it's going, so...
Yeah, for both of us. Yeah. And we've done that a couple times this year, and it's turned out pretty nice. Yeah. So it's turned out to be, like, well, I mean, like, generally we have had a good time when that happens, at least.
Like, maybe we'll come to the next episode and be like, and here's where it all fell apart, but it sure had a yes. good run. Or maybe we'll be like, you know, somewhere in between, or maybe we'll be really excited. Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah. We'll just have to see. It would be wild if the game had multiple endings and it was literally just which girl Haruaki ends up with.
It's not unheard of.
It's not unheard of. I feel like if this game does have multiple endings, the branch will be extremely late and extremely easy to go back to.
Yeah, probably.
Just because this game's format and structure very much is very linear in the way that it is presenting the story to you, the player.
Yeah.
Which, again, that's not a bad thing. I think in this case it works very, very well. Because it would be really difficult to line up the, like, flow logically of Haruaki's conclusions if not for, like, the player also seeing and following the things he learned from dying over and over again yeah. in that sort of, like, sequential fashion.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we will revisit Raging Loop. I mean, like, you'll hear about it in a month. Sarah and I are probably going to zip off to play it again in a little bit.
Yeah, I would say I had to stop for a week. I had to be like, okay, we're stopping here. I guess I got to wait till we record in a week and a half. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But until then, dear listener, thank you for joining us. We will be back in May with our next episode, our final episode on Raging Loop, where we would talk about the remainder of the game. So feel free, if you've been playing along, to go ahead and just play through all the rest of it to your heart's content. Also, we have a bonus episode coming up. Do we want to advertise the bonus episode coming up for May, Sarah? Because I think it's an exciting one.
Sure. So I thought it would be fun to do a tier list for all the visual novels we've covered, since we just hit our 50th episode 2 months ago. So I've already set it up.
Yeah. So we're going to do a fun tier list of all the visual novels we've covered on here. And I'm excited. So you will get to hear about that and maybe even see the process of it in a couple weeks. So that's very exciting as well. Also, before we hit the close, I want to tell everybody about a game bundle on Itch right now. That is the Palestinian Relief Bundle. You can go ahead and get, you know, like some 370 plus games for like $8, but hopefully you give a little bit more than $8 if you can. And you can get a whole lot of great games, and it goes to the Palestinian Children's Relief Fund. And if you don't like video games and you're still listening to this podcast, I guess first, thank you. And second, you can just donate to the PCRF directly.
Yep.
That works too. A game that Sarah and I, and also a friend of the podcast, Katie Kelly, worked on, called Jimmy Quest, is an exclusive to that bundle. So if you want to play it, you have to buy the bundle. So there's that mild incentive, but also there's like so many extremely good games that are like real, real, real good, high quality, like full price video games in that bundle. You should just go ahead and buy the bundle.
Yeah.
Anyway, that I think brings us to a close. Sarah, is there anything else that we forgot to mention, or shall we wrap up?
I think that's it for now.
All right. Well, you can find me, Runa, on Twitter and co-host at Cacklemancy, or on Itch at runa-lior.itch.io. That's runa-lior. Sarah, where can people find you?
You can find me on YouTube, Twitter, co-host at Dolls and Crafts.
Excellent. And as always, you can find the podcast on patreon.com/sayitinred, where you can find our bonus episodes, including a recent bonus episode we did on Pretty Cure.
Very fun.
And a less recent but extremely good bonus episode, in my opinion, on House of Leaves.
Yep.
And, yeah, we've got some fun things coming up in our schedule. As we mentioned in our last bonus episode, we're firming up our schedule for the next 6 months after June. So we've got, you know, our schedule only goes up to June right now, so we're firming up our schedule for the rest of the year. So if there is anything that you would like us to cover that you feel very strongly about, now is the time to shower us with your petitions and whatnot. And maybe we can find space for things on the calendar coming up.
Yep.
So you'll be able to see that soon. All right. I think that generally is a good way to close out an episode.
Yep.
Haraki would probably want to do something a little bit different. but we're not going to follow his advice. But, you know, if you do have a good insight into who is a wolf, in the situation, and you've got like a good reason for that, then you better make sure that you tell everybody and say it in red.